Hi, everyone, and welcome to a new edition of the Janet Foster Show. Today is a great day, and, before we get started, just want to let you know that you are able to reach me live right now if you tweet me on Twitter at Janet D. Foster, and that's D for Denise, and also on Instagram at Janet D. Foster. And also you can catch me on Facebook right now at Janet Foster. And certainly if you're here in Southern California, you are hearing everything. And nationwide, of course, you're listening to us on weplayradio.com. And I just have some special shout outs to some power listeners of the show. Thank you so much for your kind words and your messages this week. Olivia Tartan and Lisa Romano, Jamie McMillan, Hendrick Lamar, and Adriano Zotti. Thank you so much for your support and kind words and sharing the word about the show. Definitely today's topic, you know, we're taking a little break. We're getting into some things that parents should be aware of. I know, Gen Xers, a lot of us are parents, whether me, I'm an aunt, but even some Gen Xers are grandparents, but also millennials, older millennials, those of you in your 30s now, you have children. And, we've got some young millennials, 26, 27, that are also becoming parents. And today's topic that we're talking about is bullying. And we're not only going to touch on, the most common, concept that we think of with bullying. We think about children in school, but also we're going to touch on adults also being bullied. And, with now we're in the new technical times, we're going to also touch on cyberbullying as well, because, the way things have changed, over time, I think things like bullying has, I hate to say the word sophisticated, but sometimes that old thing that we know that we may have heard of for some of us when we were younger in grade school, it's still around. With each generation, it kind of intensifies or it changes. I mean, what we described as bullies, Gen Xers and millennials at, if you were growing up in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, maybe our concept of bullying is completely different from what's going on now. And certainly, if you're looking in the news headlines, there are some cases where violence has become a part of bullying. There's a case that happened back in 2014 in Racine, Wisconsin, the Midwest. 13-year-old, he stabs an 11-year-old child. The young girl was being bullied, and the bully resorted to using a knife, and the 13-year-old is being tried as an adult. The old adage of maybe things change, more things change, they stay the same. It seems like bullying still is around. It seems to become much more common and intensified these days. And we have someone, our guest today, her name is Jill Vanderwood. She's written a book called Erase the Problem of Bullying. And certainly we want to talk to her. She's going to give us some tips, some thoughts, and we're going to talk about the subject. And also she's going to share her perspective. Jill, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Hello.
Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you, and thank you for joining us, too. What I'd like to just start with is kind of if you could share with us what kind of drove you to write the book. You wrote a book about bullying. How did you come to get involved in this subject?
Well, I was bullied when I was in the fifth grade. And then my grandchildren were being bullied at school. And One of my granddaughters asked me if I would write this book. She knew I was already an author, and this was a topic that she really wanted me to write about.
Oh, that's a great motivator and a great reason to start that. And oh, that's so wonderful for your granddaughter to suggest that to you to do that. If you could, I kind of broke down for our audience because most of us are, thinking in terms of how old this age demographic that listens to the show. Most of us are either age 50 or younger. So it's two diverse groups, but in terms of where they are in parenting, our experience as young people when we were bullied, and I think with you sharing about your granddaughter, you've got more of the current, I think, ideas behind bullying. Can you share with us just some of the history and maybe what you learned through your journey of writing the book, reasons why children and even adults, why do they do this thing?
Well, the history started way back in Bible times. There were people being bullied way back then, so it isn't something new. And what I found from the people that I interviewed, the ones that had been bullied, the ones that were bullies were people who had been picked on at home, or they picked the wrong friends and followed them. Or one of the girls said that she was a bully because her situation at home was bad and her mother left her and she was being raised by a stepmother, and then she felt like she never got to dress nicely, and if people knew what her home situation was like, then they would bully her. So she became the bully so that the focus wasn't on her anymore, she said.
Yeah, and there's this old saying, you just never know someone's journey. So, and you point out an interesting point about bullies. To begin with, they're usually individuals that they have some kind of, need for attention and love, probably more proper love versus something that's dysfunctional in their life going on, for sure. Now, in terms of in looking at how children do it, by any chance, did you have any insights from adults on why they might do it? Is it something similar to this?
Well, I didn't really go into the adults. The ones that I talked to that were adults were talking about that they were bullied or that they were a bully when they were a kid. But talking to experts, I find that if they haven't dealt with their situation as a child, they're going to take that into adulthood. So if they were a bully as a child, they're probably going to be a bully unless they've dealt with it.
Yeah.
So probably the same people.
And the carryover, and then there's also that chain of your bully grows up to have children too, and that could be a possibility around that too. Now, you talk about something called the difference between teasing and bullying. And the reason why I bring this up is a lot in television that we watch on TV, comedy in particularly. Sometimes comics use certain methods, and I know in comedy there is a fine line. There is that wall where you go to, but you don't go too far, and that's considered teasing versus bullying. Do you have in your book, and do you have examples of what's teasing and what's bullying? Because some people don't know the difference.
Okay, now teasing is usually among friends or brothers and sisters. and they've known you for so long that they have seen you do embarrassing things, and maybe they'll bring it up, or maybe they'll bring out your baby pictures when you have a boyfriend or something. That's teasing, and sometimes that goes too far. And then the person who's being teased just can't handle it and wants to punch somebody. So it can go over the line real easily.
And then
bullying is, the definition of bullying is an imbalance of power. So say there's more than one person against you, or you have some kind of a disability or something, and then somebody's bullying you because of that, or, you know, something that they have more power than you, then that's bullying.
Or, and you know, you bring up a point about power. It could also be, and you talked about someone bullying someone, obviously, who has a disability. That's obvious. Also, other obvious things could be circumstances, social circumstances, because that seems to creep up a lot in schools. I know, you know, sometimes there, if some kids know that a child may not dress a certain way or have certain things, sometimes they're prone to being bullied. And some of it can be very aggressive, not only in making fun of them, but also isolating the person as well in school. And I know
I'm really miserable.
And here in Los Angeles, that's there's so many different types of bullying based on social class and social class. When I say social class, there's bullying going on at Beverly Hills, you know, in Beverly Hills, in the public schools in Beverly Hills, at the same way that there's bullying going on in South Central Los Angeles, which, in contrast of financial resources, is completely on the opposite end of the spectrum of Beverly Hills, but the action's still going the same. One of the things that I wanted to ask you too, what do you mean by blurred lines of bullying and discrimination, and in some of the context of some of the things that you write about?
Okay, discrimination is more like because of your religion or your race, you're being left out of something. Mm-hmm. You're not given the opportunities that other people are. And it's because of some reason that is really not correct. I mean, you're not supposed to be discriminated because of your race or your religion or any other reason. So that's discrimination when you're left out.
Right.
And harassment is another one where you're being harassed because of something that is different about you. Mm-hmm. And they're actually using racial slurs. Mm-hmm. And they're actually saying things like, or if you're a Muslim, they're saying something about your religion, and that's harassment.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, and that's something that we've seen in news stories across the country, definitely about religious harassment, and particularly certain faiths. And right now, it seems to be heightened issues around Muslims not having, just not being able to freely move about without being harassed, for sure. Now, in some of your research, you know, I mean, the title of your book is Erasing the Problem of Bullying. Were you able to find it with some of the experts that you talked to, either ideas that work or creative? Have you come across creative ways that people have shared with you at dealing with bullying?
One of the things that I found from my research is that you need to know what the bullying policies are. what is acceptable at your school and what isn't, or in your workplace. And also every state has an anti-bullying policy. You need to know those policies. And if a child is being bullied, they need to tell somebody. Mm-hmm. Because nobody can help them if they don't know. Because sometimes even the teacher doesn't see it. It's not happening in front of the teacher. So they don't need to hold that inside and just live with it. They need to tell somebody so they can get some help. And you, if you can't get help from your teacher, you can get help from the principal or even the school district.
Oh.
If you know the policies, that's one of the things that will help you, because then you'll know whether they're breaking the rules.
Okay. That's a great tip. That's a great tip for our parents out there and grandparents who we have that are involved with their grandchildren's lives too. When we think about bullying, a lot of times you think about the administrators. I know when you talk about the policies and rules, and in the news, and with me being a journalist, sometimes I look at what comes in the headlines, and a lot of our listeners they actually send me suggestions. So this subject is actually one of those suggestions. We've seen news stories where some parents, after they have gone through a process, either with the school or the school board, I remember that it's definitely back east in the East Coast, a father actually had a restraining order placed on a child who was bullying his child. And I know that it seems that some things have come to those extreme measures sometimes. And I think in that particular case, the parents of the bully were not cooperative, not responsive or anything to any of, the process for that particular school board. What I wanted to ask you was, in any of your conversations with some of the experts about policies and things like that, did you get any feedback about how, if there have been any successful ways that people have used certain policies? Any examples?
Well, some of the schools have zero tolerance, and some of the experts have told me that they don't like that, because sometimes they're classifying everything as bullying, and then they're saying that the bully has to be suspended from school, and then that doesn't solve the problem, because the problem may have already been harassment. And some of those things are illegal, and they go to court for them.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't heard anything that, like, this works in every case, but I've had a lot of parents tell me that they've had to actually take their child out of school and homeschool.
Yeah.
Because you have to have the child safe. And if this is not going to happen, that the school's not going to do anything, or the child's not going to stop, then they take the child out and find another school or something else. That would be a last resort, though.
Okay. And actually online, we got a question about that. They just were trying to ask me, could I ask if there are just some hopeless cases? And that sounds like you just answered what someone just asked. And thank you, Justine, for asking your question. Now, with the whole issue of bullying, do you have some signs of being able to tell whether or not a child is being bullied?
I would say that if they're kind of withdrawn, they don't want to go to school. Mm-hmm. They might be even making up excuses, not to go to school, because they'll always say they're sick or, make up something a lot of times, and not wanting to play with other children. And just kind of sitting around in their room and not really talking to you about what's going on. That would probably be somebody that was being bullied.
Okay, those are good tips. Now, you have mentioned that your granddaughter had kind of requested for you to write the book. Did your grandchildren, just thinking as your own little focus group, did your grandchildren have any feedback or thoughts for you at some of the things that a bully might do or things like that?
Well, I know what their stories are. One of my granddaughters, after she told me to write this book and she gave me her story, she wouldn't let me use her name, so she's in the book, but I can't tell her you which one she is because she doesn't want anything to come back on her.
Right.
But my other granddaughter was in a group of kids that were anti-drug. Mm-hmm. And instead of doing drugs, they were doing things that weren't right.
Right.
Apparently, like going out and stealing and, you know, slashing people's tires and doing things like that instead of drugs. So she realized that this wasn't a good group to be in.
Right.
So she decided to leave. And then they started cyberbullying her. And it was real serious. They were telling her to kill herself. They were just all, she was the trending topic. And it was on a Super Bowl Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also when Josh Powell killed his children.
Right.
And she was the number one trending topic.
And that's in media we call that when bullies do that, we call it ganging up to make a trend. And that was leading into my next question, because we have so many young people that are into technology, and a lot of times they communicate and their parents may not be aware of aware of either the type of messaging that their kids are receiving. We do know some parents do have some of the monitoring tools and some of the best monitoring tools out there for monitoring your child's social media. But also to what just in the last year we've learned about different ghost applications and things like that with cyberbullying. You bring up a point about just cliques. I think groups and cliques of groups, and that seems to be another, another type of bully to watch out for. And it's just as bad, if not worse, than just having a single bully, because you've got in a group or a clique, you have multiple individuals creating pressure on one person as well. And have you found in your research, have you found that has there been a difference between bullies being a part of a group versus a single bully?
There were occasionally single bullies that people were having trouble with, but most of the time it was a group. It was people that would gang together and do it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe pick on one person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so much of our television these days are tied, I think, to making. I don't think it starts out like bullying. It starts out, especially reality TV. There's this thing. It seems to have been in vogue now for the last 5 years. The whole snarky comebacks. Being able, someone can do something and to get a laugh at someone else's expense. If you have something, some snappy comeback or something that's snarky, and the whole excuse of not having a filter, That seems to be the vogue thing that's going on right now. And you see on a lot of these reality TV shows where individuals come together, they allow themselves to be filmed, and somehow they're friendly, but then all of a sudden there becomes conflict, and it seems like bullying is at the root of some kind of conflict like that. And with adults, I think, you know, your point about if someone hasn't dealt with something as a child, those things kind of creep up in adulthood. You know, have you been able to maybe interview parents that are part of PTAs or any other parenting groups, or talk to parenting groups about the issue of bullying?
I haven't talked to groups. I've mostly done interviews and talked to school kids, but I haven't done interview groups. But I was just thinking, last week I was interviewed on a radio show in New York, and they wanted to have me talk about Donald Trump as a bully.
Well, I was going to get to that. I was going to ask you to give an assessment on potentially what you see. Thank you for bringing that up, cutting to the chase on that, because I'm sure you can give a lot. And seeing how you are calling from the part of the country, I think you guys have your one of your you have a, I think you're a caucus tonight that's going on right now.
Yeah, I'm actually in Idaho. Yes, there is a caucus.
Yeah. So, yeah. And, I've actually had some former guests who are psychologists have said, if you want me to do a psychoanalysis, let me know and I'll come back on. So, in terms of, the bully that's leading the nomination of the Republican Party, what's your assessment that's going on there?
Well, they asked me in the show in New York if I thought he was a bully, and they said, one of the callers said, well, isn't he just being a tough New Yorker? You know, doesn't he have to be tough? And I said, no, he's a bully.
You know, some of the profiled information, what stands out to you with Donald Trump as a bully?
Well, you know how I say that the bullying is an imbalance of power?
Yes.
Well, he has more power because he has more money, and he's getting all of these followers, and so he's building up more and more power. And then somebody asked me on the other show, do I think that he will stop bullying if he became president? And I said, absolutely not, because he's getting more power.
Yeah, well, there's other reasons too that he wouldn't do really well at that job, but definitely, I see him, as a bully, but I also see him as someone who was bullied, who has I think turned his head around, because knowing about Donald Trump's background, he is from New York, but he's from Queens. He grew up in a well-to-do family, but I think the elite set that he wishes that he's a part of, he's never been a part of that, because he didn't grow up on Park Avenue. He grew up in Queens, and he didn't go to Harvard or Yale. He did wind up getting his education at the University of Pennsylvania, but he transferred in from Fordham. So he just wasn't connected the way the elites are. And that's why he's an outsider to them. And I think Jeb Bush said things correctly when he just called him out and just said, you can't insult yourself. You know, towards the presidency, but obviously he is, but you're right. He definitely is a bully, by all means, seeking to try to run the free world. Now, you know, just coming back a little bit with cyberbullying, do you have any tips for our audience on about how to deal with cyberbullying?
Okay, one of the experts that I interviewed is Mark Ivester. No, his name is Matt, sorry. Matt Ivester, and he was the founder of Juicy Campus, and he had one of those sites that college students thought that they were not going to get caught by making comments, and he found out that they can actually go in and find out who's making the comments, even if you think that you're anonymous. You are not.
So if you can get parents can purchase different types of software.
Well, if it's a death threat, you can even get the FBI, the police, you know, anybody involved, the courts, and the, say, Facebook, for instance. They can go in and find out who's actually making these comments.
Yes, definitely. Definitely for, I think, some of the larger popular platforms. I think the phantom things that I think are pretty difficult for some parents, for parents of high schoolers. If your child does have these phantom apps on their phone, it is difficult to find that. But also, too, I know that there's a campaign now, a public service campaign on television now, where they're just showing kids walking home, handing their phones to their kids, which it's an old school method, but it's kind of great. And it's almost like one of those old school methods of, if I don't know your friends, maybe you shouldn't be connecting with them. So it's almost like you want to know who your kid is communicating with online, and things like that. Now, you know, there was the case of, I think, the young girl who was actually being cyberbullied by another girl's mother who had a phantom account bullying a young girl, which, a lot of us who are Gen Xers and millennials, we are familiar with that particular case. And we actually think that the mother was she was out there. She was just out there, kind of in the loony bin, to even do that to a child. In terms of liability, things like that, because someone just tweeted me a question about that, what about the parents who pose as children? There are things in place for that, especially on Facebook, since that was the medium that was used for that. You mentioned something about church, kind of bullying about people's religions and things like that. Yes. Have you talked to individuals about kind of how people handle those kinds of things? It is kind of sticky to do that in the world of religion.
Well, I interviewed several people that were bullied because of their religion.
Mm-hmm.
And one was a Muslim boy, and I wanted to know how he was handling it. And he always had a group of friends around him, and they always stood up to him, for him, no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And he was being bullied, and they were saying things like, when Saddam Hussein was killed, they said their father's dead, and they just would never leave him alone. But
right.
He said as he got older, they were leaving him alone more. But his father couldn't find a job after 9/11 and had to do odd jobs because he wouldn't be hired by anybody.
Right. That's the discrimination part right there.
Yeah.
For sure. I think kids, I think kids who have a group of friends or like-minded friends, that's a good idea, that if you know, there's a certain clique or certain people that are giving you trouble. If you just concentrate on spending time with them and not being alone, a lot of times that does kind of disarm the bully in a way where it takes you out of their path. Now, do you have any tips for parents to kind of how to talk to their kids? Because a lot of times you're focusing on, in bullying, sometimes we tend to focus on the child that's being victimized. Are there any tips on how to talk to your child about if they witness bullying?
I don't really know any tips to talk to them, but I imagine that any parent who has a child has witnessed, the child has witnessed this, and sometimes they're part of it without even realizing.
Right.
Sometimes that they might just go along with it on Facebook or something. They might just add a few comments and they're negative and they're part of the bullying problem if they're doing that.
Yeah, you know, because there doesn't seem to be a lot of dialogue about what to children who somehow they witness someone being bullied, as to, that the bully might be somebody who's so mean that the child is like, oh, my gosh, if I stand up to him, then they're going to come after me. But then it's almost like you want to instill in your child that to witness something and not say something makes you a part of supporting something in a way.
I think you should tell them that, yes.
Yeah.
They are a part of it if they're not. Well, especially if they're adding to it.
Whether they know it or not.
Or watching it and not doing anything.
Exactly, because I think that gives... that inadvertently gives the bully attention to be able to continue their behavior if they're never, if you've got witnesses that aren't speaking about it. And also, I think another aspect is talking to your children to make sure they aren't bullying someone else, and creating, I think, those guidelines, creating the guidelines of what and how you outline the difference between teasing and bullying in pretty much in a school setting. If you really shouldn't be teasing anyone since you're really there for an education. But if it's, that's probably other conversations that we should have with our kids. What I wanted to ask you before we wrap up is if there's other details about your book that you think that if you were talking to people about your book, what's the one, I think, area in your book that you would tell them to really focus on when they read?
My mind is maybe not answering this question exactly, but I'm thinking that I interviewed a lot of people, including celebrities, mm-hmm. and when they went back to meet up with the bully years later, they all kind of said the same thing. They said that the bully was nobody in life, usually. Mm-hmm. Unless they'd overcome the bullying, they usually didn't succeed, and the person who had been bullied had become successful, and they were going to confront the bully, but yet they felt like they couldn't because maybe they had had such a hard life that they felt like they'd already been punished enough.
That's a good point. The point of that's a compassionate view. And you found that in the individuals you interviewed, that was consistently the same yes. idea.
They wanted to go back years later and confront them, but when they found out that, hey, their only success in maybe was in high school, they never really succeeded. in life. Maybe their life was so bad at home or something, but the bullies did better. I mean, the ones that were bullied always overcame more and became more successful.
That is very interesting. Very interesting. Well, thank you so much, Jill Vanderwood, for sharing some tips and thoughts about bullying and your book, Erase the Problem of Bullying. Listeners can pick up your book anywhere. They can get it in their bookstore and online.
They can order it from the bookstore. I don't think it's stocked in many bookstores right now, but it's online on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com.
Oh, excellent.
And you can go to my website at jillvanderwood.com, V-A-N-D-E-R-W-O-O-D.
Oh, excellent. And also, if people want to connect with you on social media, where can they connect with you on Twitter?
It's Jill Vanderwood at JillPickle11.
Oh, okay. At JillPickle11.
Yes.
Okay. And are you on Facebook?
Yes. It's Jill Ammon, A-M-M-O-N, Jill Ammon Vanderwood.
Oh, excellent. And definitely we will share your social media handles on our page as well. And thank you so much. And we appreciate the time that you've taken to share with us today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Now, everyone, we're going to change gears a little bit, and we're going to move to kind of some updates on the primaries. Some major, the march moves quite along, and we've got some states that are either having caucuses tonight and also doing primaries. And for the Republicans, right now, the two states that are doing that are going on right now is Arizona and Utah. And Pacific Standard Time, the polls in Arizona will be closing in about 20 minutes. So we don't have any results there in terms of actual results as of yet. And but Arizona, there are 58 delegates at stake in today's race. And in Utah, there are 40 delegates. And polls in Utah close at 10 p.m. Pacific time. So they still have over 3 hours left. So and for those of you on the East Coast side, it'll be, the results of that will be out about 1 o'clock in the morning. So by the time you wake up East Coast time, you'll know what happened in the Republican race. And based on the predictions for Arizona and Utah, it's predicted that Donald Trump is going to take both Arizona and Utah. And, today and today's news, former presidential candidate Mitt Romney, he is in Utah. He lives in Utah, and he proclaimed on social media, he shared his thoughts on social media, and he encouraged voters to vote for Senator Ted Cruz. Although he has stumped for Governor Kasich, he basically, I see the problem that the Republicans have right now. The establishment has got a real problem on their hands in terms of having Donald Trump, who is someone who is not only for political sakes, he's an outsider, but he's completely contrary to what the Republican Party stands for, its principles. But also he represents, though, someone that is, I think, he's not drawing a new base to the Republican Party. What he's doing is it's a base that Republicans have relied on or recruited on. And Donald Trump is playing up to, I think, individuals who probably when you boil down to it, if the policies of the Republican Party, they don't benefit them, especially the economic ones, because you hear individuals say that they're voting for Donald Trump because they need more jobs at home. And I don't think they realize that that's completely opposite of what's been the priority. The Republicans, their priority has in terms of economics and capitalism has been to support businesses who want to remain profitable. But if they offshore work to remain profitable, that's a part of the capitalistic beliefs that the party has. And you have individuals who either work for factories, that are voting with Donald Trump, which it definitely sends a hard message to the establishment. And I think it's calling the establishment in order to, I think they really need to step back and say, as a party, how are we going to evolve from this? And they definitely need to evolve from that. When they do, I think the establishment, the RNC, they have got to send the most appropriate message to say, we do not condone xenophobia. We do not condone the racist overtones. I mean, that's something that I know individual members have done, and individuals like Mitt Romney have come forward. But I think that they've got to come up with a forceful way to do it. And I know with Mitt's announcement today, he made the attempt of saying, let's support Cruz, let's anoint him, which I don't know if that was good for Cruz or not, but, they're still talking about they want to have an open convention. And, for some of you who are newbies, who are new voters, having an open convention basically would mean that they wouldn't have to start to call up a lot of the procedures that's basically in the charter of the Republican Party, because, that's where you start doing a lot of the lobbying and negotiating. And I really think that they're probably going to have a brokered convention, because I just don't see Donald Trump changing. Even by the time California's primaries, which it's almost near the end, because our primaries here in California aren't until June. So it's going to be very interesting to see that. But it's on all of the polling data that's out for Arizona and Utah. It's expected for Donald Trump to take both Arizona and Utah, and he'll, if he doesn't get all of the delegates, he'll get the majority, which he'll be declared the winner. And over to the Democratic side, and this is getting closer by the day. Today's primaries for the Democrats, three states are on deck, Arizona, Idaho, and Utah. And actually, maybe while we're on here, results should be in for Idaho, because the polls have closed. The polls have recently closed. But in Arizona, there are 75 delegates at stake, and their poll closes 7 o'clock Pacific time. Idaho has 23 delegates at stake, and Utah has 33 delegates that are up. So that's going to be interesting to see how how this plays out. And according to polling data, Hillary is expected to do well. There may be a lot of splitting between the two, but Bernie Sanders has been, his whole campaign has been waiting for the West Coast swing of the primaries, because it's in their minds and in their strategy that the West Coast is going to be the most open to Bernie Sanders. And it will be interesting, when it comes to the southern states that have gone, and with the southern states, it's pretty much been Hillary country. But with what's going on right now with the West Coast, Bernie may have a chance to do something. Not so much, and I still don't think that he's going to be able to overtake Hillary Clinton, but he'll be a little bit more competitive than he was in southern states. And one of the things that people always, they keep telling me, and I'm getting tweeted for it now, is that what's the count? The count right now for delegates for Hillary Clinton is 1,630 delegates to Bernie Sanders, 870. And, I've gotten more requests about breaking down the whole superdelegates. First, and I know for a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters, most of you are first-time voters, and you may not realize that a part of the Democratic Party platform I think the guidelines, I call them guidelines, but there's an official charter for the part, and there are bylaws. And part of the bylaws is there are pledge delegates, and pledge delegates are based on these primaries and caucuses that we've had. That's where you start seeing some of the numbers. And then there are superdelegates. Superdelegates are individuals who are either elected officials, former elected officials. They are also former appointees that are in the Democratic Party. When I say former appointees, it could be former cabinet members at the federal level. It can be former, leaders of labor. That's what's being described as superdelegates. And I've had a couple of Bernie supporters, which I am going to have an interview with a millennial from the Bernie campaign. A lot of people have told me that they think that the Clinton camp is cheating because of superdelegates, or I don't think superdelegates should be a thing. Well, it is a thing, because it's in the party's charter. And I know there have been some states that have had open primaries where people are able to vote. California is an open primary state. And then independents can vote. And then there have been some states where some independents can't vote, like Florida is a closed primary. And so Bernie supporters, you couldn't vote. And there's a reason for that. If you're an independent, the party is the party. If you're not a part of the party, it's almost as if you've got to follow the rules. Well, Bernie Sanders, he was an independent, and then he's using the Democratic Party to run. He's a Democrat now for running for president. And and you can't have super delegates aren't something, he's going to have to work for them, because for a lot of super delegates, he's voted against a lot of their things that they have, that they have tried to push for their own constituencies. So they're that, you know, those are some superdelegates that they are not going to support Bernie. But also there are other superdelegates, say like certain labor leaders that are like, well, you know, even though he's from Vermont, he voted against this bill that our membership, this would harm a membership. So that's the whole super delegate thing. And right now he has two. But, you know, that's kind of the explanation there. But we will do a full-on kind of recap in a couple weeks on all of the primaries thus far. We are going to be moving into April. New York is next month. So there's more information coming. But please, everyone, please have a great week. Remember to stay in touch with me on Facebook, on Twitter, Instagram. And thank you to Jeremy Hansen for holding down and keeping all the technical stuff going. And everyone, have a great week, and we'll be back same place, same time. Thank you.